ask their little questions and charge their not-so-little fees. By the time our younger brothers reached settling age, Addie and I had been through 2 therapists and 4 types of medication, all trying to do what nature should have already done: get rid of the recessive soul. Get rid of me. Our parents were so relieved when my outbursts began disappearing, when the doctors came back with positive reports in their hands. They tried to keep it concealed, but we heard the sighed, "finallys," outside our door hours after they'd kissed us goodnight. For years, we'd been the thorn of the neighborhood, the dirty little secret that wasn't so secret, the girls who just wouldn't settle. Nobody knew how, in the middle of the night, Addie let me come out and walk around our bedroom with the last of my strength, touching the cold window panes and crying my own tears. "I'm sorry," she'd whispered then, and I knew she really was, despite everything she'd said before, but that didn't change anything. I was terrified. I was 11 years old, and though I'd been told my entire short life that it was only natural for the recessive soul to fade away, I didn't want to go. I wanted 20,000 more sunrises, 3,000 more hot summer days at the pool. I wanted to know what it was like to have a first kiss. The other recessives were lucky to have disappeared at 4 or 5. They knew less. Maybe that's why things turned out the way they did. I wanted life too badly. I refused to let go. I didn't completely fade away. My motor controls vanished, yes, but I remained, trapped in our head, watching, listening, but paralyzed. Nobody but Addie and I knew, and Addie wasn't about to tell. By this time, we knew what awaited kids who never settled, who became hybrids. Our head was filled with images of the institutions where they were squirreled away, never to return. Eventually, the doctors gave us a clean bill of health. The guidance counselor bid us goodbye with a pleased little smile. Our parents were ecstatic. They packed everything up and moved us 4 hours away to a new state, a new neighborhood, one where no one knew who we were, where we could be more than that family with the strange little girl. I remember seeing our new home for the first time, looking over our little brother's head and through his car window, at the tiny off-white house with the dark shingled roof. Lyle cried at the sight of it, so old and shabby, the garden rampant with weeds. In the frenzy of our parents calming him down and unloading the moving truck and lugging in suitcases, Addie and I had been left alone for a moment, given a minute to just stand in the winter cold and breathe in the sharp air. After so many years, things were finally the way they were supposed to be. Our parents could look other people in the eye again. Lyle could be around Addie in public again. We joined a 7th grade class that didn't know about all the years we'd spent huddled at our desk, wishing we could disappear. They could be a normal family with normal worries. They could be happy. They didn't realize it wasn't they at all. It was still us. I was still there. "Addie and Eva, Eva and Addie," Mom used to sing when we were little, picking us up and swinging us through the air. "My little girls." Now, when we helped make dinner, Dad only asked, "Addie, what would you like tonight?" No one used my name anymore. It wasn't Addie and Eva, Eva and Addie. It was just Addie, Addie, Addie. One little girl, not two. 1. The end of school bell blasted everyone from their seats. People loosened their ties, slapped shut books, shoved folders and pencils into backpacks. A buzz of conversation nearly drowned out the teacher as she yelled reminders about tomorrow.